From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 340, recorded live Thursday, October 4th, 2012. This episode is brought to you by Telerik, offering the best in developer tools and support, online at telerik.com, and by franklins.net, training developers to work smarter, and now offering Gesture Pack, a powerful gesture recording and recognition system for Microsoft Kinect for Windows developers. Details at gesturepak.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Anders Heilsberg about a new language called TypeScript.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here in Aarhus at the GoTo conference, and we've just come out of the keynote, the ending keynote of the conference, and I'm sitting with Anders Heilsberg, who has just talked about TypeScript in front of a rapt audience.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
Yeah, it went pretty well. So congratulations. You released TypeScript on Monday. Mm-hmm. You just presented it in front of everybody and did a whole hour of live coding all in TypeScript. Mm-hmm. So give me a little basics on what TypeScript is for the people who have been not paying attention all week.
Sure. So for you know, I'd say like the last 5 years, we've sort of increasingly heard from customers and internal teams about how hard it is for them to write large JavaScript applications. Part of the reasoning is, you know, that JavaScript was never intended to be a programming language for large apps. It doesn't really have any of the structuring concepts that you would normally find in programming languages like classes or modules. And also it doesn't have any static type information. And static type information is basically the engine that powers today's modern IDEs. That's what we use when we do code completion, find all references, refactorings, and so forth. But without it, it's very hard to do a decent job. We can sort of sometimes guess and sometimes get it right, but sometimes we get it wrong. And it's very frustrating to work in an environment like that. So 2-3 years ago, when we were thinking about where to go next with JavaScript development tools, we thought it'd be really awesome if we could strengthen JavaScript with these things that are missing, like classes, modules, optional static typing, without giving up any of the inherent advantages of JavaScript, i.e. that it's cross-platform and open standards web and so forth. And that's what TypeScript is about. Basically, it's a language for application scale JavaScript development. And the way we built it is we built it as a superset of JavaScript that compiles to plain JavaScript. And then that plain JavaScript, runs anywhere on any browser, any OS, any host.
So you say that you started thinking about this 2 or 3 years ago and you had a team working on this. How does something like this, where it's a Microsoft thing, but it's an open source thing, compare to, the standards based movements around ECMAScript, which isn't going to be ready for another year or so. And
yeah.
How do you deal with those tensions? Like, you could improve the actual language or you could just do it yourself.
Well, so we've taken a lot of inspiration from the work that's going on in ECMAScript 6. So there are actually proposals for a lot of features that look like they will be adopted, like, say, classes and modules and arrow functions and REST parameters and a whole bunch more. And so some of those we have actually implemented in TypeScript, and we are aligning as best we can with what the proposals look like in ECMAScript 6. But of course, ECMAScript is not proposing to add static typing to the language, so that's something we then layer on top.
Okay, so it's a balance between there are features that you want and that you could use and you feel people could want, but there are also cool things that they're doing. It seems like you've given us ECMAScript 6 like early.
you could think of it as a preview of what's in ECMAScript 6, although we have not implemented all of the features, and there are many.
Right.
And some of them, you know, are more amenable to de-sugaring into ES5 as we do, and some are not, you know, so. Yeah.
Some people, you know, and there's always naysayers, and people are very excited about this, and I've heard people yelling good things about TypeScript and yelling bad things about TypeScript, even when it's just been out for an hour.
Yes.
And
yes,
some of the initial knee-jerk reactions are, well, why do we need this static typing for tooling? We have tools that could be doing dynamic interpretation of JavaScript and then have the IDE give you all the things like statement completion without that type inference.
Well, sometimes you can and sometimes you can't. Like if you're sitting in a piece of code where you have a function that takes a parameter X and that's all you know right now, then there's just very little that a tool can do other than show you all of the identifiers that it's ever seen. For example, when you do statement completion. And that's where static typing, if you put an annotation on, you say, hey, X is actually of type string or customer or whatever, you know, then all of a sudden we can light up a whole bunch of tooling experiences. But the cool thing about TypeScript is that it all compiles away. So when you compile, all the type annotations go away because they're purely there for static verification at development time, for static verification and for tooling's sake to aid you in writing the code. And then they just evaporate in the generated JavaScript. So there's no cost to doing it this way.
Mm-hmm. There's no runtime cost. It's just, it's idiomatic JavaScript.
Yes. Yes. TypeScript does not have a runtime library at all. It is just a tool.
So let's juxtapose it against a couple of different tools out there. Mm-hmm. Cause it's, some people were saying TypeScript, blah, 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 CoffeeScript or TypeScript, mm-hmm. blah, 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 Clojure compiler. And these right. are all not apples and oranges. These right. are apples and cucumbers.
Yeah.
For example, you have optional type annotations, but there are already optional type annotations in comments by other
sure.
compilers.
Sure. Yes. So Clojure, Google's Clojure uses comments to put your optional type annotations. But, you know, it's, first of all, it's not a very expressive place to put your type system, you know, and then it's hard to make a complete type system and it's hard to have types that depend on other types. And there are certain places where you can't really sneak in the comment and so forth. And it also just sort of looks ugly, you know, and is very verbose, right? And so we felt, hey, you know, if you're going to put these annotations in there, why not make it look like the language so you can just look at it and actually reason about it in your head without being visually disturbed by all of the noise, right?
And then there's languages like CoffeeScript, mm-hmm. which is on its surface the closest that we would initially want to compare. But CoffeeScript is a whole other kind of language.
Yeah, I think there are two big fundamental differences between CoffeeScript and TypeScript. Difference number one is that CoffeeScript is a different language, where TypeScript is a superset of JavaScript. So in order to learn TypeScript, well, you already know it. You just don't know the few extensions that are in there for classes and modules. And in fact, those you will know once you program with ECMAScript 6. So even those are, in a sense, JavaScript or a preview of it. So all you have to learn is classes, modules, and how to do your type annotations. Where in CoffeeScript, you have to learn a whole new thing. The other big difference is that CoffeeScript doesn't have optional static typing, and therefore it can't really offer you any inherent tooling advantages over regular JavaScript, you know, at least not to the extent that we can do with TypeScript.
I've seen a couple of people confused, I believe that they're confused on Twitter, saying that I tried to quote-unquote convert my existing libraries to TypeScript, which is a very kind of CoffeeScript style of doing things.
Right,
you'd copy
right.
paste and then you'd start removing things.
Yeah, yeah.
But with TypeScript, I would just, I'd change my .js to a .ts. It still works.
Sure. You might get some errors because we are, in a sense, a lint tool. So we will start flagging errors in there possibly, you know. Mm-hmm. Plus, what you likely want to do then is add some type annotations to it. But I think the thing that's interesting about TypeScript too is that you can actually choose to just leave your JavaScript alone mm-hmm. and not touch it at all. And then you can go write a declaration file that provides the static type information that is, in a sense, you know, the static view of what your library provides. And then you can use that when you're using the library, and then the tools will light up and give you all the statement completion and so forth.
Okay, interesting. So I might have an existing scott.js that I don't want to convert to TypeScript, but right. I'll make a scott.d.ts mm-hmm. sitting parallel to it.
Yes.
That provides all of that, an IDL
right.
file,
right.
as it were.
It sort of, but it's but it's a little nicer than IDL syntax. Yes. But we've actually done this for the entire JavaScript DOM and the JavaScript runtime, or the HTML DOM and the JavaScript runtime library. Mm-hmm. And we've also produced static type information or typings for node.js and for jQuery. And we're hoping that the community will pick up and do some of these typings, you know, because once you do, they're in a sense free, right? They're cost free. There's no cost at runtime. But if you make them, we can give you a much better tooling experience. I think also there's another thing that's interesting about these declaration files, which is that there is really no common language that we can use today when we reason about what is in this library. How am I going to tell you what's in there? And how am I going to tell you in the same language as the other guy over here so we can reason about what happens when we combine these libraries and what types are shared and how are they compatible? It simply doesn't exist today, right? I mean, the only way you find out is by either looking through the source code of this library or by groveling through some documentation website that uses a different vernacular than the other documentation website. And so now you sort of got to translate in your head what they're talking about. And so it's actually super useful just to have a nomenclature and an agreed upon way to write down these type declarations. And that's, in a sense, what TypeScript is too. So
a number of people split up their languages in kind of religious affiliations. And there are the dynamic people and there are the static people. And when people refer to you and to Gosling and to different people who work on different languages and have, a heritage involved in a language, they'll put you on the side of the static typer and they'll say that you're a zealot. You're a religious zealot who's going to continue to push your static typing view in the world, even though we've added the dynamic keyword in the C#.
Yeah.
Do you have a particular kind of religious affiliation as a programmer towards you really like things to be static with strong
No, what I like to do is to build programmer productivity and bottle it and sell it, right? In a sense, that's what I see my job as. Now, the vehicle that I can do that through is sometimes the language, sometimes the IDE, and it's a symbiosis between all of those that makes programmers productive, right? And I think it's silly to view it as a religious argument. It is not religious. And honestly, the thing that's interesting about TypeScript too is the religious view of it is that typing is an on-off switch. It's either not there or it's entirely statically typed. We've changed the switch to a dial in TypeScript. You can dial it all the way down to zero or you can dial it up as high as you want, because some parts of your code, I don't need the checking in here. In fact, I don't want the checking in. Well, great. Then don't add type annotations. And then there is no checking. But in other places, I might want more. And so you add more type annotations. It's entirely pay for play.
That's interesting that from the side of JavaScript going completely dynamic and then turning it slightly in the dial direction towards static, there have been a number of people taking C# and trying to dial it down from static. Some people have gone against linked to SQL and against Entity Framework and made micro ORMs that return dynamics.
Right.
People are writing a style of C# where it's just all the dynamic keyword everywhere that they can.
And listen, sometimes you have the metadata available and sometimes you don't. If you don't, well, fine. Then you just do what you do in JavaScript. But if you do have the metadata, then why not put it to good use in the tooling, right? And save yourself having to sit there with a cheat sheet or whatever it is you use to figure out what methods are available on some object.
So it sounds like you don't go with the IntelliSense rots the brain perspective that some people have.
No, I most certainly do not. I think IntelliSense saves you money. It makes you productive. It allows you to focus on the creative process. And that's the thing that humans bring to programming. It is not being a lookup dictionary of what is in some API. That just brings nothing to the table but time waste.
Yeah. That's funny. That reminds me of when syntax highlighting became really popular and the get off my lawn guys were like, we didn't need syntax highlighting. Green text on a black screen was good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And hey, sometimes you don't. And I completely understand that if you're a single person writing a large JavaScript application, you know exactly what every object is and you made it all and it's beautiful and it's fast and you can change it into any other thing that you want because you know everything about it in your head, right? Mm-hmm. But once you start programming larger apps in teams, we just find that teams want to have the ability to agree upon in between these two modules, we have the following contract. And they want to have things that can validate that they are adhering to the contract. You can't just run into each other's office and compare code all the time. You want to have some sort of agreed upon way that you write this down. And you also want, when new people come in, something that tells you a bit about what this 100,000 line code base does, right? How am I supposed to understand what this parameter X is? I don't know. I don't know X. Tell me with an annotation, right?
So it sounds to me like if someone asks you, what problem was this solving? JavaScript was fine. Mm-hmm. It's the problem of large scale development.
Yes.
It's not that you're trying to make JavaScript like C# or shove a type system in where a type system wasn't wanted.
Right. Well, yeah. But I would say that TypeScript is super useful also for little development, right? Because it'll just be, if nothing else, it'll just help you look up all of these methods on all these jQuery objects or the DOM or whatever you're using, right? So you don't have to like go look it up yourself. And in that sense, it can improve your productivity too. Mm-hmm.
Well, like in Visual Studio 2012, there's a lot of improvements with the Chakra engine, the IE 10 JavaScript engine running inside of the JavaScript editor. Mm-hmm. Because it's actually running the JavaScript all the time. But in large-scale development, I have actually personally found that that fell down using sophisticated libraries.
First of all, I think they've done amazing work. And I was floored when I saw what they actually could figure out of. But the problem is it is almost impossible to make it 100% reliable, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can do some speculative execution of code, but sometimes you can't speculatively execute it because you can't make it get to the point that you're in the code right now. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you just don't know. You're in some file that has a function, that has a parameter, and you don't know what the type of that thing is going to be. And there's nothing you can execute to figure it out because no one's written any calls to it yet.
Hi, this is Scott, and I've got a cool offer from the folks at lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A.com. It's an online learning company. They've got more than 77,000 video tutorials. They teach software, creative, business skills. Memberships start at only $25 a month. You get unlimited 24/7 access to all their top-quality video courses. They're all taught by expert instructors. You get to learn anytime, anywhere, at your own pace. There's bite-sized tutorials. There's comprehensive courses. You can learn web design and programming and regular design, photography, business, 3D animation, lots more. Lynda.com's got a variety of courses for Microsoft developers. They've got courses on Visual Studio, Windows, Windows Phone, SQL Server. You can pick the courses you want, put them in your queue for whenever you're ready to watch. You can even learn on the go. They've got an optimized mobile site, and they've even got a free iPhone and iPad app for members. You can try lynda.com, L-Y-N-D-A.com, free for 7 days. Just visit lynda.com/Hanselminutes. lynda.com/Hanselminutes, exclusive for Hansel Minutes listeners. lynda.com, training online for free 7 days. Check it out, lynda.com/Hanselminutes.
Well, there's also a number of things in JavaScript that we as developers think ought to work, and we always fall into them, like this example of the scoped this that you give. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you fix that in TypeScript?
Sure. So one of the features proposed for ECMAScript 6 is arrow functions. And arrow functions, you know, if you're a C-sharp programmer, is like lambda expressions. It's the same syntax as C-sharp, actually. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem that lambda or that arrow functions solve is that they, inside an arrow function, this is lexically scoped, meaning that you have the same this as the surrounding function. In JavaScript, this is actually sort of this hidden parameter that gets passed to every function, and you can't always be sure that you have the right this, and then you end up operating on the wrong object and therefore wrong things happen in your app. This is in particular a typical problem in event handlers where, you know, someone calls you back supplying not the this that you thought they were going to supply you and now wrong things happen, right? Mm-hmm. So with arrow functions, you can basically ignore the incoming this and just have the outer this in scope still. Mm-hmm. And what we will do when we generate ECMAScript or sorry, JavaScript from these arrow functions is that we will do the capture pattern where I'm sure you've written it where you say var that equals this in the outer function. And then the inner function, you say that dot foo and that dot bar instead of this dot foo and this dot bar. And we can do that rewrite automatically. So this is one of those things again that compilers are great at doing and doing with precision, you know.
So you squirrel away the this in a variable and then let it be released.
But we only do it if you actually refer to it. So we optimize it best we can. Yeah.
So that's an interesting point that would concern me if I were writing TypeScript and then a bunch of helper functions or utils suddenly got injected into my code. You actually said that you won't do that little trick unless you see that trick is needed.
That's correct. And in fact, we will not inject anything into your code. The only one time we'll inject something is if you have a derived class and then we inject a 4-line helper function that helps us set up the prototype chain. Mm-hmm. Instead of inlining that code, you know, it's a little more efficient to just have a helper. That's the only time we inject anything into your JavaScript other than rewrites from classes into functions and dot prototypes and blah, blah, blah. You know, the basically the idiomatic JavaScript that you would have had to write. But your function bodies are always exactly what you wrote.
Mm-hmm. So the little chunk that you drop in, that's something I would have had to have written were I to write that JavaScript from scratch. And I've noticed that for small kind of 4 and 5 line functions, it looks pretty one-to-one. But then as soon as you start doing anything complex where you add a class or you add a module, the amount of JavaScript you had to write kind of explodes.
Well, I mean, that is why the ECMAScript committee is looking at adding classes and modules to JavaScript, right? It's like you can't see the forest for the trees when you're writing these you know, function closures and the funny patterns that people use, like the setting up the prototype chain and whatever. It's just, it's visually noisy, right? And then it makes it hard for you to sort of get a mental picture of what your code is doing because you're getting like this, distracted by all the details, right? Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the noise that we can take away.
And these patterns that people do to make classes work inside of JavaScript or to make modules work, were these things that the designers of JavaScript or the designer or two of JavaScript like thought about? Or is it one of those things where we hacked it and now it's the hack that's everyone agrees is the appropriate hack?
No, actually these are patterns that have been there all along, and there was always an intent. Now with prototype based programming, you can do other patterns than just the class pattern, you know, but the class pattern is really what it was put in there for, right? And that is the use that by far is the most common for prototypes.
Mm-hmm. But what about naysayers who might say that you're trying to bring, you know, bad OO patterns from the 90s into this kind of brave new world of JavaScript?
Well, you know, just because there are classes, it doesn't mean you have to use them, right? I mean, it's one of those things that it's a tool. Mm-hmm. And if the tool works for you, well, then for God's sakes, use it, right? If it doesn't, then don't. You know, you can write a TypeScript that uses just the other sort of closure patterns that are common in JavaScript, where you use local variables and then have nested functions that close over the local variables and so forth. We support that too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just there are an awful lot of people out there that write an awful lot of object-oriented programming, and they it does seem to work for the world at large.
A lot of people have been saying, and these are more tech journalists, saying that you know, TypeScript is Microsoft's answer to Dart or Microsoft's answer to CoffeeScript. And well, I don't work for the team, and I'm just an opinionated blogger. Yeah. I wrote a blog post that hopefully you haven't seen yet. Well, I just
have seen it.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, it says, why does it have to be an answer to anything? I mean, are you guys sitting around thinking, oh, they've sent a shot across our bow, we have to answer? Or are you just doing your work?
It is an answer to something. It is an answer to the cry for more productive JavaScript development tools. Mm. That is what it's an answer to.
It's not a technology answer to a specific technology.
No. It's about making programmers more productive.
Mm-hmm. And is it what's in it for Microsoft? I mean, it's open source, it's NPM install. It's far too nice for Microsoft to be doing this.
Well, listen, this is the way the world works now, right? And we have to adapt. And honestly, I think it's a lot of fun to work in this more open environment where you can find like-minded people from anywhere on the globe, right? And you can see on internet time, you know, I mean, we've been out since Monday, and there's already support in Cloud9 editing for TypeScript. You know, it happened in like less than 48 hours, right? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's super exciting to be part of. Yeah.
So we shipped a Visual Studio plugin and then some initial plugins for like Emacs and Sublime.
Yeah, Emacs, VI, and Sublime. Yeah.
Okay. So presumably the Visual Studio one is like the best example of what, or so far, of what the strong tooling can offer. It's got the refactoring and things like that.
Sure. Yes, but all of the things that you see in the Visual Studio plugin are actually powered by the TypeScript compiler and language service, which are written in TypeScript and are open source and a part of the distribution. They sit in the Codeplex Git depot right now. You can go check them out. Basically, what we do in Visual Studio is we load up the JavaScript compiler, and then we run it in the background and use the language services for colorization, statement completion, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that's Visual Studio specific about it really is a shim that we've written in C# that shims it into Visual mm-hmm. Studio.
Right? Interesting, because one of the first things that someone tweeted was, where's the open source version of this, this editor?
Yeah.
You're saying that all of the hard work is being done in the open source bits that they already have.
Yes. The hard work. I mean, there's in the playground, there's an editor control that we've written, but that uses this stuff. But the intelligence behind it is all the open source stuff.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So when you're typing whatever dot and you get statement completion, you've got that information available in
That's the compiler running in the background.
Yep. Interesting.
Yep.
When you opened up a few minutes ago on stage, you opened up a TS file and then suddenly it knew about all these other TS files. Like you didn't open a project.
Right. Right. Yeah. So one of the things we allow you to do is we support two common module systems that are out there, CommonJS and AMD modules. And those are the kinds of modules. The CommonJS modules are used by Node.js. And so when you write a modular application in TypeScript, we can look at all of your import statements and see what references what modules they reference. And then we can in turn load those up and look at their import statements. And you can also put, reference comments in your files that say, hey, by the way, when you compile this file, also compile this other file along with it. And we can automatically then trace the whole graph of connected files, if you will. So whenever you compile a file, we automatically do that and we compile all of these other files alongside with it. And that's how we can get a consistent view of your context at all times. And we do that in the IDE also. So we can infer what your project is by looking at all of these imports and reference comments.
One of the things that took me a while to kind of click, because again, it's only been since Monday, but I think it just clicked about an hour ago, was the flow. You keep talking about flow. Mm-hmm. You could have a regular JS file, like anything you've ever written, put a single annotation on the right place, mm-hmm. and then everything lights up.
And then watch the types flow down from there. Yes. And that's the beauty of type inference when it really works, right? Is mm-hmm. that you get all of this static typing just from sort of at the root of your app object. You say, hey, my app is an Express server. Mm-hmm. Great. Then we can flow from there that there's a get method, and the get method has is a function that takes a callback that has two arguments. And so we can flow the types into those mm-hmm. and almost by magic, provide you all of the static type information readily available in code completion and refactorings and so forth without you actually having to do any work almost. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to pretend that it's magic. I mean, there's obviously some work, but it is quite astonishing to see it in action.
In the opening keynote that mm-hmm. I got to give, I gave a talk called Angle Brackets and Curly Braces, and I talked about the one virtual machine and the one language you get on the client.
Right.
And the many virtual machines and the many languages you get on the server.
Right.
And how excited I was about that. And then at the very end, the closing keynote, you, the creator of C#, gives a talk on a JavaScript thing. Uh-huh. Do I now panic that you've jumped ship and you've given up and now you've gone to the other side of the curly braces?
No. But listen, as we talked about earlier about religious zealotry, I am not a religious C# zealot. I am a language designer, and when language design problems present themselves, I jump in mm-hmm. because I'm fascinated by what you can do mm-hmm. with languages, and for example, with static typing. So that's what I do. Now C# has a long, healthy life ahead of it. I'm still involved in that project. We just shipped C# 5.0. With some really cool extensions for asynchronous programming that I think are just fantastic. And we're still going on the Roslyn project, which is a project to rewrite the C# VB compilers and the IDE in all in managed code and provide compiler as an API services on top of that. And so there's lots of investment and excitement still in C# and .NET.
Okay, cool. That makes me feel better.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I thought was really well said, and I think it was actually Luke Hoban, mm-hmm. who works on the project, that CoffeeScript makes JavaScript feel comfortable to Ruby programmers. Therefore, TypeScript can make JavaScript feel comfortable for C-sharp programmers.
C-sharp or Java programmers or anyone who sort of, because, you know, I mean, it's like JavaScript is a language in the curly brace family, right?
Right.
And so if you're a curly brace programmer well, most of the other curly brace languages actually do have static typing, right? And so in a sense, what we're layering on top here is optional static typing that has no cost and exists just at development time.
Right. So if you're a C, C++, Java, C-sharp programmer, this might just feel right to you.
I think it feels very familiar when you. That is consistently the thing that I hear C-sharp programmers tell me once they play with this for a little while. They go, wow, this feels just like being home.
Yeah. I really like that you've got an online playground. You go to typescriptlang.org and you can see that there's a TypeScript on the left, and on the right-hand side it expands. And if you've been working in JavaScript, you'll see these familiar patterns emerge, and then you'll realize that while it doesn't have the kind of intense terseness of CoffeeScript, there is a wrist-friendliness about TypeScript where it's like, wow, I didn't have to write all those curly braces and deal with all that nesting.
I mean, the reality is that even if you're coding in CoffeeScript, you still have to be proficient in JavaScript, right? So you now have to learn two languages.
So you're not trying to hide it.
We're trying to make just what are qualitatively the few things that are missing from JavaScript itself, right? And how can we add those without disturbing all of the advantages of JavaScript, right? And that's what we're doing with TypeScript. Mm-hmm.
So there's no runtime library. There's no virtual machine. You're not generating a bunch of extra code that I can't see.
Correct. This is all about tooling, yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Oh, you bet. This was fun, yeah.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.